Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 130 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make that theater happen. Just a quick reminder that you can download and subscribe to the podcast from the Apple Podcast app or from iTunes. That way your feed will be automatically updated when we release podcast episodes. But you can also listen to us on many other streaming services such as Stitcher and Google Play. Now, please do rate and review our podcast. If you haven't done it before, please do it now because iTunes, Apple Music, whatever, they've changed your algorithm. So we need those 5-star reviews. If you have a chance to do it, that'd be amazing. If you can spare 30 seconds, help us reach more theater lovers out there around the globe, that would be amazing. And now for this week's podcast. It's a bit of a Sound Geeks episode this week. I am using that term in the best light possible because I am a sound geek and have been one as long as I can remember. I mean, certainly since I got my first keyboard at the age of 12, a gift from my father to me, so I wouldn't be bored during the summer. We moved to Okinawa, Japan, and I didn't know anybody. It basically just kickstarted a love of all things sound technology related. And whenever I could get down to the music store, I would. Those were my weekends. I wouldn't say wasted, but spent. As I record this, my home office is stacked with sound tech, old and new, analog and digital. And it's a subject that absolutely continues to fascinate me. When Matt and I attend theater and live entertainment professional trade shows, I love to take a look around at the new gadgets on show, and that's where we came across the guys and girls at Shure. I guess they're best known for their vast array of microphones and packs. I mean, they have been around for a long, long time, pioneering sound technology, pushing the boundaries of sound capabilities for decades. I mean, if you take a look at any jazz, big band, or rock and roll star from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and you will see them singing with a classic silver skull mic, which we talk about. Today, Shure have come up with a microphone that is hitting the theater world by storm. Smaller, lighter, better response and performance, along with a body pack that is far less conspicuous than those they've released before. And this sitting alongside their big initiative called This Is The Moment. They've got some incredible videos that I'll put in the show notes. Go check it out. Jason Mraz, Jagged Little Pill, all that kind of stuff. Really cool videos on YouTube highlighting the critical moment where every single piece of the production puzzle comes together at the moment the performer takes a breath to speak or sing or even play a note or anything. It's just that magic moment. I had the pleasure of talking to the senior product manager, microphones at Shure, about the years of development and incredible invention and iteration that has seen their new Axient digital wireless system and the TwinPlex system used on shows such as Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, War Horse, and the new musical Jagged Little Pill. Have a listen.
Yeah, so we have two prime products now for theater that we kind of traditionally never had. One being Axient Digital, which is our new high-end wireless system that features the ADX1M micro body pack. Mm-hmm. And then in a similar time frame, we developed a new lavalier and headset called TwinPlex to be the companion product for that, really targeted for a lot of different industries, but really targeted for theater, because when you mate that new TwinPlex mic with the micro body pack, you're really getting a pretty much best in class audio quality, durability, and just performance out of wireless now.
I mean, when you think of Shure microphones, at least for me, you know, and you come from a music background as well. I mean, it's the live performance has always been, you know, the ultimate stage mic in my head is the Shure SM58 or SM57. You know, is that your kind of your workhorse?
Yeah, we kind of stay around the building here that keeps the lights on for us.
Okay,
and,
good.
And we still are amazed at how many of those we sell every year, and we don't know where they go and who buys them. Maybe they're just going into some landfills, everybody just dumping them somewhere, they just keep buying them. I don't know where they all go.
I don't think you could ever have enough. You never know when somebody's going to go, oh, I don't mind singing with you guys, and you break out another one. But, I mean, what was it that got you guys into thinking that, okay, we really need to get into the theater, and this mic, I've seen it. I've held it. It is incredibly small, and the pack is incredibly small. What made Shure as a company want to, you know, was it something that you guys saw in theater that you went, hold on, we can really do something here?
Yeah, I mean, we had been, I would call ourselves kind of a fringe player in the professional theater market. And we actually had pretty good performance at the mid and low tier for theater, collegiate theater, regional theater, with ULXD and QLXD wireless systems and SLX, and kind of our mid-tier lavs and headsets. We felt like we were actually doing pretty well in that aspect of it. But for professional Broadway West End theater, we knew we needed, it wasn't a long putt for us to really start attacking that market. And with Accent Digital, when the start of Accent Digital started, we focused a ton on industrial design of the body packs and form factors and really targeted theater as a prime example for how should the next generation of a body pack feel. And it drove us to the rounded edges and an internal antenna design. And so you don't have an external antenna on the ADX1M on Accent Digital. And it drove us towards, the theater market as a prime example of a body pack has to be worn, and it has to be comfortable, and it has to stay cool, and it has to be virtually waterproof and sweatproof.
Yeah.
And it really, during that development effort on the wireless team, we also realized, we really need to have a premium lav and headset to go with this product as well. And that's where my role came in. I manage most of the microphone projects here, my team does, and we said, we're gonna start these things, about 5 and 7 years ago. We started really front-ending research on both the wireless Accent Digital platform and the lavalier and headset platform, and we knew the players we had to go after. At a first benchmark on the lav side, we knew we had to get there. We had to get there from an audio quality standpoint, and we didn't have a transducer design that we had existing in our portfolio that was going to cut it, we felt like. So we ground up, started on a new transducer element called TwinPlex, using a dual diaphragm design.
Right.
And that was a start of what was like a 3-year project on just what we call advanced development in terms of, all right, how is this, if we want to get waterproof, sweatproof, best-in-class cable, we want to have best-in-class dynamic range and the lowest self-noise, here's what we need to handle and do to get to that point.
That is you're saying 7 years ago. That's a big commitment and almost a, I don't want to say gamble because you guys are, world-class, but that's a big commitment, 3 years of research for a new product, and something that you're going to put in the market.
It is a big commitment, and we are fortunate enough to have the patience for projects like that. We're a private health company. We're not beholden to like a sales figure for the quarter that we must hit. We had the appetite for it, and we viewed it more as a platform, going forward, and less of an individual product, because we knew we needed a new transducer design to compete at the class of sound quality we needed to. It was very much an effort of patience, actually, because Accent Digital also, wasn't a walk in the park either.
Yeah.
That was, multiple technology blocks coming together to make Accent Digital happen. Both from an RF efficiency standpoint, and we're not getting more spectrum in this world, we're getting less. We knew we needed, there's a totally new audio codec and audio modem in that product, all new form factors, all new, redeveloping battery technologies and interference avoidance, and, the thing can automatically change channels in milliseconds if you get interference. So in a perfect world, both of these products would have come out together at the same time. But TwinPlex was a little late, unfortunately, but it was worth it. You know, we spent 5 years on developing a new cable.
Like, yes, I've seen the video I've seen the video that you guys have put out. I mean, if anybody wants to go see how crazy the development and this the kind of I suppose the stress test of every single component that you guys have put in, because you talked about sweat, you talked about being cool, the pack's got to be rigid, but the cable testing, you guys, the machine that you built to test the cables is just fun to watch. It's crazy.
Yeah, you saw it probably live at ABTT.
Yeah,
we built like a mini version of it because we're so proud of it. I mean, I knew going in, like, all right, we know we obviously have to deal with sweat, and we had some stuff to we'll talk about how we get to that point. But I laid the gauntlet down on the team. I was like, guys, we don't have a cable today that is going to cut the mustard. We had good cable, but we didn't have anything thin enough. We needed four colors. We needed thinner cables and more flexible cables and more durable cables, because it's the first thing that goes on a lav.
Yeah.
And we kind of had to re-engineer our interconnects, and in the process develop a new cable. So we had a cable commodity team who really spent about a year just looking at partnerships within the high-end cable industry. And we found one that was very promising and borrowed from the medical industry, used in like stents, actually. They use this this technology that's inside the cable.
That's crazy.
To run a stent through your vein, right?
Yeah.
So they have...
And that's not going to break.
So
you don't want that to break.
Yeah, so I mean, exactly. Like technology where like life and death situations, yeah, like on a medical device, you know, you can't have it break. So, yeah. So they submitted some articles for us to first test on the CableFlex machine, and we literally ran them for 2 weeks straight on the CableFlex machine, and they never failed, and blew our specification out of the water, and the quality guys were like, we kind of need the machine for other things now. Is this good enough? I'm like, yeah, it's fine. It's good. Let's go. So that was a really promising. You know, we had to work some kinks out through it throughout the process, but
sure.
That was really exciting to have a new industry first cable that we were extremely proud of. The cable on it is, we have two versions, a 1.6 millimeter diameter version and a 1.1 really thin version for
length. Ridiculous.
It's a significant portion of the cost, actually, of the microphone. We felt like it was, you know, that important to be,
yeah,
almost 50% of the cost of that thing is the cable and the connector.
But that's important because we do, as theater people, we don't, I mean, the cables, we will bend them, we will yank on them, we shove them into clothing, we wrap them around whatever we've got to,
bodies,
who knows what. Those cables get abused properly, and they do always go. I mean, cables are the first things to go.
Yeah, so we took it to heart, and the early research is like, oh, and because they're all competing factors. I need to be super durable. I need to have crazy strength. I also need to be really flexible. I need to be paintable. It's like there's a lot of requirements, opposing requirements that come together when you're trying to design a cable. And but I would say that's definitely one of the hallmark properties of the TwinPlex line, is how flexible and relaxed the cable feels, yet, you know, it has over a 50-pound pull strength on it.
That's
so
crazy.
It's pretty remarkable.
Pretty good, robust. And when you talk about, you mentioned the sweat test as well. Again, it's an amazing little vid. Amazing to see what, because we do sweat, you know, especially in musical theater. You know, you think about something like Les Mis or Hamilton or whatever. You guys have got, you know, you're Harry Potter at the moment. You're using the system on Harry Potter and War Horse, and those are two hot shows. And you've got a lot of sweat from a lot of actors going into, you know, that's around. Microphones don't like sweat. Microphones don't like to be wet, and neither do packs. How did you guys kind of overcome that? What did you, you know, where did you have to start?
So cable durability and sweat were the two main feature sets that we really needed to understand. And so we developed early on in the project, we wanted to figure out a way to objectively measure for sweat immersion and sweat, you know, entering into the microphone or entering into it, interconnect on a body pack or something.
Yeah.
And so we developed this thing called the Sweatbot, which is basically mimics a forehead. You know, it has a heated moleskin pad at 98.6 F, and we lay microphones on there, and we buy really expensive artificial sweat that's even has like amino acids in it, and we put it inside of this basically a mini anechoic chamber that can run a curve on a speaker, and we can measure, you know, every 10 minutes, you know, as sweat drips into the microphone, you know, is there a loss in sound quality? And we were able to. It was really interesting because as we were benchmarking our competition as well, and benchmarking our early prototypes, you know, I would go out in the field and talk to customers like, okay, so when a competitor lab fails, what does it sound like? You know, how does it, what do you hear?
Yeah.
And, you know, they say, oh, I hear this product, you know, this one just loses a whole bunch of sensitivity, or this one has a whole bunch of high frequency loss, and then it'll come back for a little bit, and then it'll just completely die. And I was getting all of this like anecdotal feedback, but to be able to correlate that to an objective measurement on the Sweatbot was really, really interesting. To be able to say like, oh yeah, that's exactly what they said it was going to happen, and we would measure that, and then we would tear it open, and we would figure out how the microphone is actually failing. You know, did the diaphragm rip, or did the impedance converter give up, or was there a hole? Is there a leak somewhere?
Yeah.
So we were able to really dive into not only our prototype products, but our competitors' products as well, to understand how they're failing and what they're doing, and you know, make steps forward into not doing those things. So we use that Sweatbot extensively throughout the development of it, and we even, you know, to the point where we hired a metallurgist on staff for a few months to understand, you know, compatibility between the components in the microphones. You know, that whole effort drove us into basically the core of it is the cap design is the kind of the first line of defense in terms of when sweat enters the microphone, it gets near the microphone, where does that sweat go? Does it go, get sucked into the mic, or does it bounce off? And the cap design on TwinPlex was you know, a lot of different iterations in terms of on the Sweatbot using, you know, high-speed cameras and figuring out, you know, where does the sweat go? How does it enter? And it drove us to this nano-coated, super hydrophobic coating on the cap that basically serves as a first line of defense and getting sweat away from the mic rather than in the mic. And then we know if sweat does go in there, we know that it's not going to permanently damage the microphone in the long term. So it's a really cool effort.
Take me through also, because designers, directors, you know, they don't really want to see a microphone if they can. You know, they want to see as little a profile of a mic as possible. I mean, what was it? Did you have to go out and talk to designers and producers or directors and say, like, how big is big, you know, or how small is small?
Absolutely. We had 3D prints, you know, models of what the size and shape of the mic would be or could be, even down to like, you know, what has the cap look and you know, the curves of the mic and how's the cap attach. And we had, you know, 5 or 6 different designs. And the first pass at it, my gut was like, man, this thing is too big and too long. And, you know, we knew objectively we were, you know, much longer in length than our competition at that scale. And they're like, well, take it out there, see if it'll work.
Did you cross your fingers, John?
I was like, well, I'll take it out there, but I'm telling you right now, they're probably going to hate it. So I took it out there. I showed a couple sound designers, and the first time they looked at it, they're like, I would never put that on a forehead.
Right.
Way too big.
Right.
And I'm like, I know. Thank you for saying it. So I went back to the team, and I'm like, guys, like, this is ridiculous. We can't. Either we're killing it, we're killing this project now, or we have to take out like 3 man layers.
Wow, really? Is it literally that is the margins you're talking about? Because if one designer says, I will never put that on somebody.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, we got to a turning point. Like, we could have said, all right, we know that. We'll just won't make this for theater, and we'll make it as big, and we'll make it what we have now. Or we can basically delay the whole thing a year and make it smaller.
Wow, John, that's incredible.
So we swallowed the pill, and they figured out how to get some length out of it and shrink down. I mean, we're fighting, literally fighting every point a millimeter, you know, tenth of a millimeter. So like we would look at this, you know, this tiny little microphone on the screen in CAD, you know, in the model, in the 3D model, and it would, and I would like yell at them like, why is there so much space in there? And they're like, that's like 0.02 square, you know, millimeters of air, you know? I'm like, get rid of it. Because, you know, that's preventing me from having, you know, my cap that's under, you know, 5.5 millimeters. Yeah. So it's like, it was like down to that, you know, they were like, every time they wanted to grow it, I was like, no, we're not. Well, this wall thickness isn't big enough. And that isn't, we need more space here. And I'm like, figure it out. Like, we can't grow it anymore. So, yeah, I mean, we knew going in, you know, with a 5 millimeter caliber product, which, you know, most sound designers are accepting of. But we fought tooth and nail for every last tenth of a millimeter to be able to go to that market with an acceptable size.
And so when you finally had that, the mic, the profile you wanted, the size you wanted, you know, the cable you wanted, where did you guys take it to do your testing? And was it in theaters? Was it massive venues, small venues, whatever, you know, what was it that you kind of, how did you put it through its paces in a live environment?
Yeah, we tested the snot out of this portfolio. We really did. I kind of with the team, I was like, this is we have like one chance to impress with these guys. And I said, I really need to make sure it's right, not only from a performance standpoint and a size standpoint, but even like a skew and model assortment standpoint, you know, like, so we had some really early samples, like, you know, hand built here, and, you know, not production processes. And, but we have a couple of really core consultants that we took them on some TV shows. We did The Voice early on in the testing. We did, as a TV broadcast mic, we, worked with a couple of regional theaters here in Chicago and Minneapolis as well. Cause you know, I would say a Broadway.
I would,
a top sound designer wasn't going to really throw a prototype mic on a stage.
Yeah.
Especially if I'm a handful of them. But we did have some off Broadway work, slipping into some shows and rehearsals. We had them on some TV shows. We had them on some film shows. I did have them on an off Broadway. I had 12 of them on an off Broadway show early on. And as the feedback started coming in, it was like pretty earth shattering from a sound quality standpoint.
Oh, great.
And it was, they were finding they were having more gain before feedback. They had bigger low end response, more natural low end. The high end was smoother to the point where like they weren't sending the microphones back and they were asking for more. So
that's a good indicator, right?
Yeah. So, and then the cable, of course, performed really well. They just loved it. I was thoroughly impressed with how confident the users became in the product, even at such an early stage.
You know, if we can wrap it up by saying, you know, John, what do you think? Where do you see the future of this of the microphone going? You know, do the packs get smaller when the battery technology grows? You know, when the diaphragms can get even smaller and more responsive and receptive, what is it? How do you see the mic industry and sound industry going?
It's a constant cycle. When with the advent of more digital wireless, and it's pretty much everything is digital now in terms of wireless protocols. We can't hide behind the microphones. Can't hide behind a not optimal sounding wireless system anymore, an analog wireless system. And that's something we quickly realized as we were developing new digital wireless systems, where you have 125 dB of dynamic range and it's linear 20 hertz, 20 kilohertz. You can't hide a bad sounding microphone anymore. And you definitely can't hide a bad sounding actor or actress. So, it's really it was interesting because we were talking to a lot of sound designers and they're like, you know, this opened up my palette to the point where, like, I can now hear when a microphone is going to start to go even more.
Wow.
And I can hear the variation in my microphones even more. And it's revealing almost too much, you know, in a good way. But it's giving them a much easier and transparent quality and palette to work with so that they can add the processing they want rather than deal with the processing that's happening in the wireless system or deal with the sound of the microphone. And that's been, I think it's audio is just getting better and better, and the workflows are getting easier and easier. Packs are getting smaller and smaller. Lavs are getting smaller and smaller, and the audio quality is getting better in all of those processes. So it's been a fun adventure to break into the theater market and with some really exceptional class-leading products, both on the lav side and the wireless side. And we're excited to see more Shure products on theaters and stages.
Well, so do I. I love a Shure microphone, John. I do. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And I know there'll be some people listening to this podcast who, you know, some sound professionals and people who are, you know, sound geeks like myself, you know, love a bit of
Excellent.
Equipment. We'll get a lot out of this. And hopefully we'll be catching up with you in the next year or so, you know, see what else you guys have got coming down the pipeline.
Absolutely. We're it's a franchise for us, both on Axiom Digital and Twinplex. So we're not letting off the pedal at all. So
perfect. All right, John, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, guys.
John Bourne, Senior Product Manager, Microphones at Shure. I could have chatted him for hours about SoundTag, but there is more to come when we bring you a panel discussion later this month from Plaza in London. You will not want to miss that. It's going to be talking about the future of sound. And then we're talking to people from designers all the way through to performers. So you won't want to miss that. Now, before I go, just a few housekeeping notes. If you're a theater professional, head on over to curtaincallonline.com. Sign up for a free profile page. All you have to do is create an account with an email address. Make up a cool password, away you go. Start sharing your credits and show people what you've been up to. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Curtain Call, and you can follow me at John Schwab, JohnSchwab. We'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions or feedback from the podcast. Just get in touch with us via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned or write to me personally at john@curtaincallonline.com. It just leaves me to say a huge thank you to John Bourne and everyone over at Shure. No doubt you'll be listening to their work without even knowing it on your next theater visit. Thank you for listening to the Curtain Call Theater Podcast. Thank you for waiting during our summer break. And we're back to a weekly schedule. So I will catch you all next week. Bye.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.